It's back to school time, and that means it's back to standardized tests. This year, the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction is changing the way it categorizes students' scores on the state's standardized exams. Under the previous system, test scores fell into one of four categories, ranging from advanced on the high end to proficient, basic, and below basic on the low end. Starting this fall, DPI is lowering the thresholds to reach those categories, so a larger portion of students will score in the higher categories. Plus, they're changing what they're calling each category. State leaders say the changes will help students, while critics say it's just changing the goalposts without helping academic achievement in Wisconsin. Alan Borsick is a senior fellow in law and public policy at Marquette Law School. He analyzed the test score policy changes in recent articles for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and he talked with my co-host, Rob Ferret. Here's a listen.
Before we dig into these changes in the tests, I want to establish which tests we're talking about. I'm a parent. I got a couple kids now who've gone through the Wisconsin schools, and there were a lot of standardized tests over the years. Which ones are we looking at here when it comes to these changes and what the standards mean?
It's basically the full array of tests that are required by the state of Wisconsin. You're right that a lot of school districts do other tests, tests that are done maybe three times a year or such. But these are the annual tests done in the spring for third grade through eighth graders. They're called the forward test for ninth through, I think, normally 11th graders. It's a variation on the ACT college admission tests. But it's the state of Wisconsin required test.
Now take us through the timeline of how these test score thresholds have changed back, 2012 and now here in 2024?
2012 was a very important date. At that time, both nationally and in Wisconsin, you had a lot of pressure, a lot of advocacy to strengthen the rigor of systems, that kids weren't being prepared for college enough, that too little was expected of kids. Wisconsin was regarded at that time, based on analysis from some national advocacy groups, as having some of the softest standards, some of the easiest standards for defining a student as proficient or better, that the bar was quite low. So there was advocacy to toughen up tests. There was advocacy to go. That was the time of the Common Core to have more rigorous and more consistent expectations and curriculums for students. Frankly, almost all of this didn't pay off as far as improved achievement nationwide. So the superintendent at that time, Evers, raised the bars very substantially, largely to match those that were being used by the National Assessment of Educational Progress, which is a program that's required by federal law to be used in all 50 states about every 2 years for reading and math for fourth and eighth graders, and in a certain sequence for some other subjects and occasionally for 12th graders. But it's the closest thing we have to a national testing system. NAEP is a very tough grader. Everybody agrees with that. To be called proficient by NAEP is really a pretty high standard. Wisconsin went to that standard. And as expected, the percentage of students who were labeled as proficient or advanced went down sharply at that time, even though that didn't reflect any actual change in student performance. It was just a change in what you had to do to get labeled in one category or another. The idea was that this would increase rigor. It would raise expectations. More students would succeed in becoming college ready as defined by, say, ACT and others. Frankly, that part didn't work. Ultimately, student performance didn't change very much, except the percentages changed. Things didn't really go up. A lot of educators hated this system because it was aimed so high. And now what we have is reversing that, basically admitting this was a failure, lowering the bars. It's not quite clear we're lowering them back to where they were before 2012. Probably not quite that. But nonetheless, lowering the bars, the percentage of students who will be in the higher categories is going to go up when they release data from the test for last spring, which will be maybe late September or early October. So it's going to look better for schools, without actually changing student performance, perhaps at all. In addition, they changed the labels,
right?
Which is a whole other subject.
And I want to get into that. Actually, that's where I wanted to go next. They've changed these thresholds, right, for these four different categories.
Yes.
They're also changing the names, especially and most significantly, I think, at the lower end of performance. What changes are we seeing?
Well, for many years, Wisconsin has had four categories: advanced, proficient, basic, and below basic. In my very informal and unscientific definition, below basic meant you really weren't on the playing field as far as succeeding in school. Basic meant you were on the playing field, but you weren't where anyone wanted, you know, that wasn't the goal. The goal was to be proficient. The percentage of students who were below basic was quite high statewide, and especially in low-income communities like the city of Milwaukee. So it was a pretty unattractive picture. Now you're going to have four different categories. Advanced remains advanced. Proficient is now called meeting, M-E-E-T-I-N-G, like going to a meeting, but meeting the standards. What was basic is now called approaching. And below basic is now called developing.
Part of the thought there, Alan, is I think is, you know, these are things that are used to measure schools and school districts, but the kids and their families see this result as individuals. And how's it making them feel to see below basic? Does that lead kids to give up? I mean, is that part of the thinking here that, hey, kids might see this result and there's a stigma and they give up?
That is definitely part of the thinking on the part of the Department of Public Instruction and on the part of the state superintendent currently, Joe Underly, these are kind of harsh terms and it can really hurt a kid's self-esteem and their interest in school. I mean, how'd you like to be called below basic? And so on an individual student level, this has been especially unpopular with a lot of educators for many years. As far as what kind of label to use, I mean, if you're calling kids developing, a lot of kids are developing by whatever that means. But there are a lot of kids, especially in the harder hit, the higher needs areas, like the parts of the city of Milwaukee, parts of Madison, parts of Appleton, Green Bay, Beloit, you know, Milwaukee's not the only place. There are a lot of kids who are not developing, if that means making progress. There are a lot of kids who are really detached, who are really not engaged, who are really not progressing. So one of my questions is, calling them developing, where does that leave any effort to meet their needs?
Talking to Alan Borsuk, senior fellow at Marquette Law School, longtime education columnist at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, about changes in the thresholds, the standards in statewide school testing. Alan, you've pointed out over the years that sometimes politics gets into our education policy. A lot of disagreements, but I think one thing people agreed on a lot, two decades ago, is we need data. We need measurables. We need to understand how schools and students are doing in order to fix the problems. And I think people have accused it of spreading almost into data fetishism, like testing and collecting data for its own sake. Do we get obsessed with how we collect data at the expense of maybe what you were just saying, actually helping kids?
Well, that's a really good question. If you go back to the passage in 2001 and early 2002 of the federal law, the most sweeping federal education law ever, which was called No Child Left Behind, and it mandated all sorts of steps to try to deal with schools that were not meeting standards, annual yearly progress, and all sorts of things. Overall, No Child Left Behind was not a successful program because things didn't change. But it did. That was the first time the federal government required every state to take standardized tests, to report the data, disaggregate the data by not only race and income, but by some other categories, including by special education status. It was the first time the spotlight was put on how are kids with special needs doing. So No Child Left Behind unleashed this huge wave of data. It didn't accomplish much else, frankly, but it did create this mountain of data. data is a way to understand what's going on, but data isn't a solution. As the cliche always goes, you don't fatten your farm animals by weighing them. You fatten them by feeding them. And we were doing a lot of weighing and not too much feeding, both in Wisconsin and nationwide. In 2015 and 16, the No Child Left Behind law was basically erased. The federal government retreated in major ways from playing a role in state and local education practices and setting goals. But the one thing that stayed in the new education law, which is known as the Every Student Succeeds Act, it's hard for me to say that name with a straight face since it didn't really do anything to help students succeed. But one of the things that stayed in that law was a national testing requirement.
Do you see efforts going on here in the state, maybe a local district or something, to focus on that feeding side, you know, to actually help students learn? Do you see positive shoots out there somewhere, Alan?
There isn't much going on to actually improve student outcomes. I mean, I admit I see things through a lens of living in the city of Milwaukee and keeping an eye on Milwaukee public schools, which is just such a troubled system. And, you know, at the state level, in the budget that was approved in 2023, there was $50 million to be spent over 2 years on improving reading programs and emphasizing the more science of reading, as it's called, which is best known for phonics and such. The governor, the legislature approved and the governor signed this bill, now known as Act 20, including $50 million that was supposed to be used for helping local schools buy curriculum and have reading coaches and, I mean, training teachers to better. Over $49 million of that remains locked up in the legislature because of a dispute between the governor and the Republican-controlled Joint Finance Committee. That's money that was supposed to be spent starting this year, and it's not happening. You say, why? Not because it's not an educational need, not because it's not in the law, because of the politics that are freezing that up.
Alan, we've got teachers, you know, clocking in now for the new school year on the ground, trying to do their jobs in the midst of all this. Your thoughts on our educators out there, what they're contending with, the challenges they're facing, and I don't know, any encouragement for them or wherever you want to take it?
I could offer actually quite a bit of encouragement when it comes to individual teachers and life in their classrooms. Once the door closes on the classroom, lots can go on between a teacher and students. There are huge problems. There's attendance problems. There's engagement problems. There's mental health and other health related problems for kids. But teachers and students can accomplish a lot together. That it's almost like when you close the door, you can close off a lot of these outside distractions and disputes and barriers. And so I hope teachers, especially those who have younger students, kindergarten, first, second, third grades, where the groundwork is laid for educational success so much, I hope they have a great year. I hope they accomplish a lot. But it's going to be at that level the most of teachers and kids in an actual classroom.
Alan, thanks again for joining us today.
I hope this was helpful.
That's Alan Borsick at Marquette Law School.